Okay, very good morning to you. We're going to go live to the courts in Dublin shortly. Stay tuned for that and the trial of Gerry Hutch. We're looking at traffic gridlock on today's programme. Looking at the racing festival over the weekend. We're also going back to the whole Loch Race situation and St. Brendan's. And today also we're going gardening with Anne McKillen. So if you want to get your questions into us, you can do so to 0870-958-968. That and loads more between now and 12. Just do stay with us. Don't go anywhere else. Now, very good morning to you. Welcome into today's programme. We have loads more on the programme. Just don't go anywhere else between now and 12 midday. We also have those two giveaways in association with Dubarry and with winabmw.ie. So we'll give you details on that and you could be the final qualifiers and all that goes with it. But I think the country, we've been gripped indeed by the Gerry Hutch trial, which continues in court in Dublin. And many lawyers and many other people indeed have been present following indeed the beginning of the case, which is taking place in the Special Criminal Court. And again, it's going on for a long period of time. I'm joined indeed by our former colleague and court correspondent and award-winning court correspondent Frank Rainey, who's in court indeed reporting for us and for other news outlets as well, but mostly News Talk where he works and they feed us the news. But Frank joins me on the line today. Frank, good morning to you.
Good morning, Keith.
Thanks for joining us today. An award-winning journalist. Congratulations again. So congratulations to you.
Thanks very much, Keith.
Listen, well done to you. But I'm just wondering what the atmosphere is like within the Special Criminal Court, because security is at an all-time high and you're there on a daily basis. What's it like being in the press box there?
Well, it's funny you should ask, because you do become a little bit conditioned to it. But it was startling at the beginning of the trial to walk into court and be greeted by members from the armed response unit standing outside with machine guns. There is a very beefed up security in place at the Criminal Courts of Justice now, where this trial is taking place before three judges of the Special Criminal Court. Inside the building then, you do notice a lot more Gardaí. And within the courtroom itself, as you can imagine, there are lots of Gardaí scattered across the public gallery, and this trial is open to the public and members of the public have been attending every day. There is a thorough screening process before you go in. That's not that unusual because, you know, given the nature of the cases that come before the Special Criminal Court, mostly gangland related cases these days, I should say, there is a screening process where you have to pass through a detector similar to the one that you would see at an airport. And you have to sign in, you have to show identification if you're asked. You know, we would have press cards and we would have no issues getting in. But at the beginning of this trial, things were a little bit different in the sense that one of the court guards actually had a clipboard with a list of all known journalists known to cover cases down in the Special Criminal Court were on that list. And if you weren't on that list, you had to show identification and credentials to prove that you were actually a journalist. There were plainclothes Gardaí who were put through the same rigorous screening. They had to show their credentials and accreditation. So security has certainly been stepped up, but as the trial moves on now, it's funny, you just become accustomed to it. But I suppose just given the nature of the case, you know, and the allegations being made, the background of the gangland feud that's at play in relation to what's alleged to have happened at the Regency Hotel, that's why the extra security measures have been put in place.
What brought this to mind was I was driving into Dublin on Tuesday afternoon, and I saw the helicopters in the sky, I saw the guard, the cars going hither and thither, and I made the point on your yesterday morning, I think it was, that there was more guard the cars in and around the Special Criminal Court than in the whole of County Galway on the day in question. And then from what you're after saying there, there's a hefty amount of Gardaí within the court services itself. So, I mean, the cost of this trial eventually will come out, but it's quite expensive when you see all of the security that's in place for this.
Yeah, and obviously I'm not privy to the conversations that would have been had behind closed doors just in relation to the security measures that were going to be put in place for a case of this nature. But certainly there is an expense, but whoever has made the decisions obviously feels that that expense is justified. Mm. And certainly there doesn't seem to be any signs of that, you know, grip loosening as the trial rolls on. You would have expected, I mean, clearly there was an awful lot of interest when the trial opened. There still is, but, you know, from a media perspective, it has kind of dwindled a little bit over the past few days. But certainly when it comes to the security measures that have been put in place, they still remain strong each and every day.
Now, the building in question, the Special Criminal Court, I mean, security is always very high within it, but it's notched up a good few ratchets in this regard.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, no, I think that is fair to say. I mean, I would have covered an awful lot of cases there over the years. You know, tragically, the Special Criminal Court has been so busy over the years that they've actually had to open up a second Special Criminal Court. I mean, this court was set up back in the, you know, late 1930s. The legislation was put in place that allowed for a court of its kind to be established. And that was essentially to deal with them, you know, terror-related and dissident-related cases. And particularly during the height of the Troubles, you know, a lot of cases in relation to IRA membership would have come before the Special Criminal Court. But the court is used, you know, these days it's far busier dealing with gangland-related cases. Yeah. And that's, I suppose, just because of the nature of gangland crime over the years. You know, you take the Hutch Kinahan gangland feud, for example, it has claimed 18 lives. You know, not all of those were on Irish soil, but those that were, where prosecutions have been taken, those cases have been heard before the Special Criminal Court. Now, the Director of Public Prosecutions has to ask for permission for those cases, for any case in general, I'm speaking here, for those cases to be heard before the Special Criminal Court. And they'll have to prove that the ordinary courts, like the Central Criminal Court that would traditionally hear murder cases before a jury of 12 men and women, as opposed to just three judges, which is the case in the Special Criminal Court, you know, the DPP will have to prove that those ordinary courts are not adequate. And some of the reasons that they put forward, and I'm speaking generally here, not specifically in relation to this trial, but in general terms, you know, the fear would be that there are certain cases that come before the courts where jurors may be influenced or may be intimidated or may be bribed, and that obviously would affect, you know, the potentially affect the outcome. So there is a fear sometimes with certain cases that should, you know, in the ordinary course of things, go before a jury. And that's why the Director of Public Prosecutions was certified that they be heard before three judges. So in this case, specifically, three judges will decide the fate of Jerry Hutch. And also, let's not forget that there are two others in the dock with him, albeit they are facing lesser charges. They're not facing murder charges like Mr. Hutch is. They're accused of facilitating the murder of David Byrne by providing certain vehicles to the criminal organization. And all three men have pleaded not guilty to those charges.
So bring me into the courtroom then. And what's it like when you're sitting there? I mean, is everybody just sitting on a chair? Are they in handcuffs, those that are up in front of the judges in question? And what's the atmosphere like? Or what did they do while the court case is ongoing and defence and prosecution are making their case?
Well, at this point in the trial, the prosecution is presenting its case. So Sean Galan is the prosecuting barrister. A little over a week ago, he stood up in front of the judges and he gave them an overview of the case that he is going to try and prove beyond a reasonable doubt. And the onus is on him to prove his case on behalf of the prosecution, the people of Ireland, beyond a reasonable doubt. So it took some time, given the complexity of the case, the fact that there were three people in the dock, it took some time for him to go through that overview, you know, those allegations that he is going to try and prove to the court beyond that reasonable doubt. So at this point, what he's doing now is calling witnesses and presenting evidence in the hope that the evidence that he presents, once tested, will satisfy the judges, you know, that it is beyond a reasonable doubt. Clearly, the defence don't have to prove anything. There is a presumption of innocence. Jerry Hutch and the two other Dublin men, Jason Bonney and Paul Murphy, have both pleaded not guilty to those charges. Jerry Hutch has pleaded not guilty to murder. They're entitled to a presumption of innocence. They don't have to defend their case. They don't have to cross-examine witnesses. They don't have to call evidence when the prosecution rests its case. But they have been cross-examining various witnesses, they have been engaging with the process. Jerry Hutch has got a hearing difficulty. We heard that at the outside of the trial. So he's seated there on the inside of the dock beside the two others. He's wearing headphones that is linked to some sort of a hearing device. He is following proceedings intently. The other two sitting in the dock, one of them wearing a face mask, have been engaging with their lawyers throughout too. We've heard from a lot of witnesses since this trial opened. We've heard from civilians who were at the boxing weigh-in where David Byrne was shot dead back in February 2016. We've heard from two press photographers who were there. Colin O'Riordan was working for independent newspapers at the time. He and a reporter, Robin Schiller, went to the event. They were told not to bring any camera equipment. They weren't going there necessarily to cover the boxing event that was taking place at the hotel. They were going there in the hope that they might spot certain people of interest who were at the event. We heard that Robin Schiller spotted Daniel Kinahan. Daniel Kinahan has been named before the High Court in Ireland as one of the leaders of the Kinahan cartel. We heard that Robin Schiller told his colleague that he had seen Daniel Kinahan, and they were leaving the event when this all unfolded. Colin O'Riordan gave evidence of hearing a loud noise. Robin Schiller said that's a gunshot. He described seeing the armed men, for all intents and purposes, they were dressed as armed Gardaí, rushing into the Regency Hotel. He said he heard more noises, and when he looked into the reception area from outside the hotel, he said that he could see a man standing on the desk with what looked like a weapon in his hands. He said that he heard more noises. He saw these people leaving, and he became suspicious when they were entering the building because they were holding AK-47s, and he thought it unusual because he didn't think the Gardaí, you know, were armed with AK-47s. He noticed they were wearing trainers going in as well. He thought that was unusual, and he did, when he saw what was happening inside, he heard the commotion, he heard the way they left. He became fearful for his life because he was standing literally at the bottom of the stairs as they were leaving. He put up his hands and he just said, "Guards, I don't know where to go." We heard from another photographer who arrived on the scene as shots were being fired. And he said that he noticed a silver van parked outside the hotel. He saw a hand coming out the driver's window. He said he saw the barrel of a weapon. And he said he instinctively grabbed his camera, you know, where most people would run for their lives. He grabbed his camera, and he said that he noticed some people running towards him, and he instinctively took a few shots, seven or eight shots. And the one of the photographs that he took is the photograph that I'm sure we've all seen. It appeared on the front page of the Sunday World, and it was of a man dressed as a woman wearing a wig and a knee-length dress, and another man with a flat cap, who we now know was a dissident Republican called Kevin Murray, who has since passed away. Both of them were armed with handguns as they fled the scene at the Regency Hotel. And it was that photograph, the prosecution alleged on the opening day of this trial, that apparently caused some concern to Jerry Hutch, because we heard that in due course it will be alleged that he met with a former Sinn Féin councillor called Jonathan Dowdall in a park in Whitehall in Dublin sometime after the shooting. Jonathan Dowdall, we heard, will give evidence of Mr. Hutch appearing edgy. He was worked up. He was very concerned about this photograph. He was concerned about an escalation of the feud as a result of it. He was concerned about the safety of his family. We heard it would be alleged that his family was being threatened during, you know, this was something that he's alleged to have said during that conversation with Jonathan Dowdall. And crucially then, Mr. Galland, the prosecuting barrister, said that Jonathan Dowdall will give evidence to say that during that conversation, Mr. Hutch said he was a part of the team that shot David Byrne. We also heard that recorded conversations will be played for the court. This was during an alleged car journey that Jerry Hutch and Jonathan Dowdall took to the north. Their car was under surveillance. It was bugged. There were conversations recorded, and we will hear the recordings of that in due course. Again, these are all allegations that Mr. Galland has to prove beyond a reasonable doubt. And Jonathan Dowdall, as we all know at this point, has been handed a four-year prison sentence after he pleaded guilty to facilitating what happened at the Regency Hotel that day.
It's a fascinating case that I'm sure will make the big screens eventually, so it will. I'm sure the script writers in the public gallery as well, as your good self. It's amazing. And you don't fear for your safety, Frank, because there's so many Gardaí around. But it's amazing to be so close to be able to get so close to the case and just watch it unfolding and report. I know you've done an awful lot of court reporting from the district court in Galway now to the Central Criminal Court in Dublin. That's right.
And look, you just have to approach each case. I mean, I started out covering cases, as you say, down in the courthouse in Galway. I have very fond memories working for you guys back in the day and filing stories from there. And I know it's a funny thing to say, but you approach each case in the same professional manner. You know, like the Special Criminal Court at the moment certainly feels like the safest place in the world. But also, I mean, like, there's an awful lot of interest in this case. There's an awful lot being written about. There's an awful lot being spoken about on shows like your own. But at the end of the day, you have to remember that this isn't a piece of fiction. This isn't a piece of drama or entertainment, because at the end of the day, you know, somebody lost their lives. David Byrne was shot 6 times in the head and body on that day back in February 2016. His family had been in court throughout. There are 3 men on trial facing very serious charges. Jerry Hutch is facing the most serious charge you can be leveled at you in this country. Mm-hmm. And they've all pleaded not guilty to it. So, you know, again, they are all entitled to that presumption of innocence. Absolutely. And they are entitled to that due process. And with me and my colleagues covering the case, we're always very mindful of that.
Frank, we better let you into another day, but thanks for taking so much time out of your day and joining us today. Award-winning Frank Rainey there, joining us there. And thank you to him for giving us 15 minutes of his time before he goes into court in approximately 36 minutes. Thank you, Frank, for that. Quick commercial break. We're back after these. We're looking at traffic gridlock indeed, and one lady joins us. Plus, I've got a very good letter in front of me that I'll be using as well. Stay tuned.
Galway Talks, in association with Tesco. Tesco Father Griffin Road, opening on the 3rd of November.
Hey, very good morning to you. Welcome into today's programme. A little secret to tell you that was told to me last evening. And if you're on the N59 tomorrow, so if you're anywhere near Atishonok, which is, it's on the N59 just before the turn-off to Orenswell, or at the turn-off to Orenswell, that general area there, where you could have parked indeed in the past and gone up to Lorna McMahon's garden. Well, right across the road from that, May and Michael Kine tomorrow morning, they're having a day for breast cancer research and a coffee morning there as well. It's on from 11 o'clock until 3:30 tomorrow. And if you're in and around that area, pop in. Michael's sister, Phyllis, was baking last night and she texted me. God knows what she's cooking now. She could cook anything, known Phyllis. So all of her cooking and display of cooking, or lack of it, she wouldn't be making the Great British Bake Off now no more than myself, to be quite honest, Phyllis. But it'll all be on display from 11 o'clock until 3:30 tomorrow, and they're raising money for breast cancer research. So well done to Michael and May, and May and Michael, and the family as well. So if you're on that area on the N59 tomorrow, it's on the right-hand side as you go out, just opposite the turn-up to Orenswell there, to the famous O'Toole's garage in Orenswell. So just at that turn-off, just go a little bit further and it's on the right-hand side. It'll be well signposted. Michael will be up all night blowing up the balloons. Oh, he will, don't you? Let me move on, though, today. The comment lines are open, 0870-958-968. Mary wrote to me last week and we asked her to come on because she sent us, and I read the letter, a very moving letter about being stuck in traffic. But she was too upset. But she joins me today on the programme. Mary, good morning to you. Thanks for joining us today.
Hi, Keith. How are you? Thanks for having me on today.
No, you, up to this point, you couldn't talk about it because you're beside yourself with upset with all the traffic. And
I was, yeah. I had a bad... I sent an email to the council. Basically, I had been sitting in traffic with my daughter for over 2 hours and I was just so upset. I had sent them an email the week before as well. We were spending, on average, 3 hours a day in the car. So an hour and a half journey time into town and an hour and a half back out. And I mean, I did the same journey last year and it was taking me 45 minutes. I mean, I know it's journey time. I'm coming in from one of the commuter towns. So, you know, I expect it to take a little bit of time, but it's just unreasonable now. It's just so much. So anyway, I came home. I just went straight to my room, climbed into bed and emailed the council. And I don't normally do that. And I CC'd yourself in on it. And then I think one of your producers rang and I just said, no, I couldn't. I don't want to come across as some, like, falling apart lady, you know, on the radio. But, yeah.
But, I mean, it was down to the point. I mean, what struck me was my daughter did her homework in the car again. Yeah. All talk again, of taking a walk to unwind after a day were forgotten because we were home so late and we were so exhausted. Mm-hmm. And again, not alone that, but when you go further into the email that you sent, that you cook... So tonight you'll be cooking tomorrow's dinner because you don't have time to cook when you get home.
Yeah. No, no. Well, she's too hungry. And you know what teenagers are like? They're savage when they're hungry.
Yeah.
But so usually I'll cook before or I'll cook on a Sunday and I'll have dinners ready so that we don't have to come in the door and put on a pizza because that's not going to help anybody feel any better. So usually, yeah, if I have time, I will cook in the evening and I'll have dinner ready then so we can come in and put on dinner. But yeah, it broke my heart because she was looking, you know, she was saying, oh, I might as well just start my homework because when I get home, you know, I'm going to face into 2-3 hours of homework. So yeah, it just, it seemed unsustainable to me and it seemed unnecessary because, you know, there are very, what I would see as simple solutions. And, you know, I've been speaking to a few counsellors in the meantime because I honestly can't continue this for the rest of the year. I just can't. It's too much. Now, I mean, today, for example, I was in to the school in an hour and then 15 minutes to work. So it's an hour and 15 minutes. That's on a good day. And, you know, anybody coming in on the commuter towns knows there's no bus availability either, but they know that there are little bottlenecks all around. And it's, you know, there might be some stretches of road you think, oh, this is great, there's no traffic, but it's coming on to the main roads, or it's, you know, a town like Clonbu, for example, you know, where there's a bottleneck, a tailback of maybe three kilometres some days.
But that Headford Road is causing ferocious problems on an ongoing basis.
Yeah.
I mean, the N84 is not fit for purpose. It's not able for the traffic load coming in there in the morning too.
No. And I looked at the Traffic Infrastructure Ireland website. Now, it's a bit of a, you have to fiddle around with it, but you can get monthly statistics of how many cars are coming in and coming into that junction there at Headford Road. So it's not only just Headford Road, but you'll have cars coming in from Boherna Drive as well and from all the other roads feeding in. And then all those cars going out in the evening as well. So they're all stuck on the Quincentennial Bridge in what is an absolutely, I mean, it doesn't make any sense, the Quincentennial Bridge. People turning left have to actually take the right lane to go across and then cut across people to get into the left lane. Otherwise, they're sitting in traffic for an extra hour just in that left lane because it just goes straight ahead. It doesn't make any sense. But the Clonbu is one part, and then the Headford Road, because there's no bus corridor anyway, even if we did get extra buses. The buses are oversubscribed. And, you know, if there is an accident, like, for example, the guards were removing a car, and hopefully nobody was too hurt, but it went off the road at Barna Waste, and they actually removed the car during rush hour.
Yeah, we had that on the radio that morning.
Thing. Yeah, there was no reason for that, you know. So there's a lack of thought, there's a lack of traffic management within the city, and then there's at the wider level, we need investment, we need infrastructure, and people, like the councillors have been banging their heads over this for years, and this is not, it's not a recent thing. You know, I spoke to a few councillors, and they've put this to the Minister for Transport 4 years ago. And then, you know, there's been loads of suggestions since. So I don't understand, sitting in my car every day watching my daughter do her homework, I just don't understand why this is not moving on. I can't. I know everybody forget about it during COVID, but, you know.
But then when you collect your daughter then, because then you're doing the reverse run. So when you collect your daughter in the afternoon, you do the reverse run. But once you do that reverse run, I mean, the bridge is chock-a-block coming from, say, the Circle K on the at the end of the bridge, all the way over the bridge, turning left to go out the Headford Road. And
not even that, you can't even get on the bridge sometimes.
Yeah, like, no, you can't.
You can't, because I come up side roads to try, I've figured out ways to get through the traffic as quickly as possible.
Little rat runs.
And everybody does this, the rat runs that you can get. But every rat run, every turn is literally full. Like, there's queues of people trying to get onto side roads to cut into main roads. And then you have people taking dangerous risks. I mean, over the last few weeks, I've seen people running red lights. I've seen people driving on the wrong side of the road to cut into lanes to turn right or left because they cannot sit for an hour just to get what should be a minute. You know, people are losing their minds on the road, and it's really going to have an awful effect, let alone the stress that builds up with people.
Now, somebody, of course, will ring in. I'm not looking at comment lines yet, but they'll say, well, Mary, why doesn't your daughter go to school, you know, closer yeah. to a secondary school rather than coming into the city? But you work in the city, so...
Yeah, I come in anyway. So I have to come in because I can't drop her at 7:30 anywhere. You know, there isn't even a breakfast club that's open at that hour. And I'm not going to do that. And actually, she wanted to come into school in town. And it's a good school. And she's happy and she's friends there. And, you know, we're happy out. So it is. Now, we are looking at even moving in because this is not sustainable. We can't do it.
So you'd look at selling up in the outskirts and the town.
Yeah. If we can try and afford it somehow, that's exactly what we're going to have to do.
Because you can't afford, mentally, you can't afford to do it.
No, and I can't look at her sitting in the car for 3 hours. No, it's not every day 3 hours. But over the last 3 weeks, it's been on average 3 hours. So, you know, she's actually said to me she doesn't want to do athletics after school because we'll be too late going home. And it, like, we left at 5 and we were home at 7. You know, that's not fair.
But even if I'm late going over the bridge now, but last Friday evening was an absolute basket case in town. And I had two jobs. I had to go and visit my mom. She's on the Hetford Road in Carlhaven. So I wanted to go and see her. And then I wanted to go to Ballyban and pick up something. And then I had to go to Galway Shopping Centre and pick up something. So I left here at 2 o'clock, went to Carlhaven for 15 minutes. That's all I was there, 15, 20 minutes max, out. Went to Ballyban because I had to be there and picked up what I needed to become Ballyban, picked up what I needed in Galway Shopping Centre. And I got home at 5:25. And I just sat in traffic and accepted the music was good on Galway BFM. And I was flicking back and forth over stations. And I kind of was thinking of you then at the time, and I thought to myself, it's every day. It's okay in the morning coming in because it's light and early in the morning when I come in. But good Lord, trying to get home any time after half two in the day is just...
Yeah, it is. You used to be able to get out of the city before 4. You could, if you were able to go out and do a bit of work at home, that's fine. But now that doesn't matter at all. And if you actually run out of petrol and you have to go into a petrol station...
Oh, God, love you then.
You can't get out of the petrol station.
Yeah.
So, like, it's unreal. And if she says to me, I need something for this for tomorrow and we have to run in somewhere, that's an extra hour. You know, if you run into Dunn's in Terryland, you can't actually get out of Dunn's on Terryland
Not even the rat run. No,
because they're going back up Lisbon. Like, you know yourself, and I'm not the only one. And there's people who are in a much worse situation. And people going to hospital appointments and people doing all sorts of things. Oh. And as you said, you know, you're trying to visit your mother. And, you know, these things should be easy. They really should be. It's unnecessary.
No. The visit is traumatic enough, but I mean, trying to get there is traumatic too. So it is. Yeah, and I was passing by the hospital. Where is it going at all? On Tuesday. No, Wednesday. It was Dublin Tuesday. Yesterday, yeah. And Monday and yesterday, there's a huge traffic queue going into the car park in the hospital. So if you have an appointment in the hospital, you're damned altogether. Because there's a man there controlling the traffic. They turn in off the Newcastle Road. Then they turn left to get into the queue going into the car park. And they just sit there. They just vegetate and sit there. Nowhere to go. Mary, we won't sort it today, but we'll throw it out there and see what people think.
Well, what I would ask people to do, if you're a motorist and you are in your car, because the problem is once you get to work or you get somewhere, you get where you're going, you just want to forget about it and you want to get on with your work and you don't want to think about it again. But honestly, if anybody is listening who has somebody who's sitting in traffic, please contact your TDs, contact your counsellors, email them, keep emailing them, put pressure because I'm sure there's funding there. There has been funding granted for the N84, I think, to do a feasibility study to widen the road, and landowners have been contacted. But a feasibility study will take a year or 2 years anyway. It's just not, it's not enough. No. We need action. We need bus, park and rides. We need, you know, we just need it. And there was a report saying, you know, that I think it was Michael and Barna Road and Hedford Road didn't have sufficient need for bus services, extra bus services, or any, you know, extra attention, really. Now, if they want to see need, go down on the road and ask people and see what's happening and just see the frustration in people's lives who are already, you know, pushed to the max. It's just too much.
Mary, thank you for joining us today on the programme. Now, dovetailing into that, Andre wrote to us as well this week. He said, Keith, can you raise the issue of traffic management, please? Replacement of water pipes on the Barner Road should have been done over the summer months. Unfortunately, this was not started until late August, resulting in stop-and-go traffic on the Barner Road during school months. At the same time, there's a stop-and-go traffic beside Blackrock Tor for the last few weeks as well. Two main roads, east, west, are having to stop and go traffic at the same time. And now a number of exclamation marks there. Results are easy to predict, especially that in this situation, without proper traffic management, cars travelling from Threadneedle Road are having priority over the ones from the promenade. It takes more than 20 minutes to drive to Salthill roundabout to Blackrock last few days. We do not, we cannot keep going with this. We have to get a bypass, but how can we trust anything can improve in this town if two roadworks cannot be synchronised and not causing total and utter gridlock? And that's signed by Andre. So we're going to send that off to Councillor Donal Lyons and see what the hell is going on there, because I don't know. It is bizarre. And it's not one person's fault. I think it's just the traffic volumes myself.
Galway Talks in association with Tesco. Tesco Athenry, opening on the 3rd of November.
A very good morning to you. Well, the October festival, indeed, of racing is on this weekend. Michael Maloney, General Manager of Galway Races, joins you on the line. Michael, good morning to you.
Good morning, Keith. How are you?
Good. What, I mean, you have a full festival, so you're having some major events, including indeed that Winner BMW .ie competition as well, and a big function there. For October, this will be one of the busiest in 3 years.
Yeah, it's it's great. It's been a great year, obviously. Very positive summer festival. Great to have people back on track. And I suppose this, October Bank Holiday Festival kind of rounds off our season for 2022. So we have a 3 day event, as you said, Saturday, Sunday, and Monday, and National Hunt racing on Saturday and Sunday. So people always look forward to that. And then Monday is a flat card. As you said, then race in pink we have on Sunday, which is, a partnership with the National Breast Cancer Research Institute that we've had running for probably about 5 years now. And it's been hugely successful in terms of raising funds for the charity. I think, I know obviously it was COVID interrupted, but over the last couple of years, they've raised about €275,000. For the charity at the race day, and I think it looks like they'll raise a significant amount of money again this year. They have massive support from the business community from in Galway City, County, and right around Ireland. Really, it's a national charity. All their races, they take the sponsorship of all the races on the Sunday. They have all the races sponsored mostly by local businesses, which is great to see. And yeah, it's a really positive thing to be involved with to round off the end of the year, really.
So what are the starting times Saturday, Sunday and Monday? Because on Saturday, the clocks go forward. So we go back. We gain an hour on Saturday night, so we do.
Yeah, so yeah, we're starting at an unusual time on Saturday. 1:08 is the first race, so 8 minutes past one. And then on Sunday, as you say, a little bit earlier, 12:40 on Sunday, and the same on Monday, then 12:40 as well. Monday is our regular student race day, and we're running that event again this year in conjunction with University of Galway. And it's always been a very positive event. It's great to see so many, I suppose, youthful racegoers, and really they're our customers of the future. And we do that in conjunction with the VSA Society, which is Voluntary Services Abroad. So it's young medical students that are training to be doctors, and they raise funds to go out to some third world countries and they give their time out there in terms of helping out and needing what needs to be done out there. So it looks like there'll be a huge number of students here on Monday, and it's great to raise, there'll definitely be, a five-figure sum raised for them as well on Monday. So it's great to be rounding that off as well. So really, this weekend is, I suppose, a little bit about giving back after all the support that we've got over the last couple of years, and particularly this year and this summer. So it's a nice one to be involved with.
Can they buy their tickets online in advance?
Yeah, definitely. Obviously, tickets are available at galwayraces.com, where running shy of the last few student tickets. I think we're looking this morning, there was less than 100 left, so I'd say they'll be sold out later on today. But yeah, certainly for Saturday and Sunday, gates will be open every day, and you can come and pay on the day.
So well done. Looking forward to it. And again, let's hope the weather. Have you any indication as to how the weather is going to?
Sure. We're in the west of Ireland, as you know, so it could be sunshine or it could be rain, but there's plenty of space inside this time of year. So, you know, just dress for the weather, and, you know, we've music on every day, and there'll be a nice little atmosphere around the red spot, I think.
Well, there was a shower yesterday evening, I think it was about 3 o'clock, and a mother of God, it was like as if somebody just flushed the toilet and it just came down. The water, I had to pull in. I don't know, did you see that shower?
Glad not to be out in it. Obviously, yeah, oof. It becomes, you know, for the team here, Jerry Broderick and his team, in terms of, you know, getting the ground right. You know, we go from a summer festival where, you know, we obviously had a very, very dry period, and I think we've had 180 or 90 mils so far in October. So it becomes a different task to get ground ready for this time of year. But it's recovered well after the summer festival. Entries are really strong for the 3 days in terms of the horses, and declarations are in for Saturday this morning. I'd imagine we have 7 races programmed at the moment, but it looks like that might turn into 8 on Saturday. So yeah, everybody in the industry is certainly looking forward to being here. I think we've €300,000 in prize money on offer over the 3 days. So it's a big support of the racing industry in Ireland as well.
Good. Michael, enjoy, and thanks for everything. And speaking of that special day, indeed, on Sunday, supporting breast cancer research and the National Breast Cancer Research Institute, we're going to give you a chance to win, because if you want to go to the following website, you can do so, and that's winabmw.ie, just winabmw.ie. Go to that website, you could buy yourself a ticket for €20, and you could be driving away in a brand new BMW hybrid. And again, it's just go and buy them from there. Go get them, go buy them, and support breast cancer research and that draw as well. Again, it's on this coming Sunday, 30th of October. So what we're going to do is quite simply, we're going to give 7 of you last chance to win one of these wonderful car tickets as well. So what we're going to do is give 7 of you a chance. And again, Michael has spoken there about breast cancer research and Professor Kern and the wonderful work that he and the team are doing over there. And they're making a difference. They're absolutely making a difference, hugely making a difference. And it's great to have such research facilities in Galway. I mean, there really are cutting edge facilities that they have over there. But for cutting edge facilities, they need money. So please go to winabmw.ie, buy your tickets from there. But again, today we're going to ask you quite simply to send us a word. And today the word is races. Okay, races, R-A-C-E-S. Send it to us straight away and be in with a chance to win one of those 7 tickets we have up for grabs. And you can tune in to the National Breast Cancer Research Institute Facebook page on Sunday, the 30th of October, and see if you're the winner of that brand new car. Do so straight away. And if you want to get further details about the charity itself, go to breastcancerresearch.ie. That's breastcancerresearch.ie. And good luck to everybody involved in that, and especially to Caroline Loughnane, who's the chairperson of the NBCRE. We wish her the very best of luck, and she'll be leading the troops on Sunday with the entertainment and indeed that draw as well. If you want to get in contact with us today, we'd love to hear from you. Let me take this back again. What do you do? You may contact with us by texting us to 0870-958-968. You can WhatsApp us to that number. You can call us on 091-770-077, or quite simply, you can email comments. It's comments at galwaybfm.ie. We need your questions for Amy Keown early today. She'll be with us at 11:10. Can you get your questions into us, please, as soon as possible? And you can do so by calling Siobhan today on 091-770-077. Get them into us. We'll put them all together and we'll put them to Anne just after 11:10. Stay tuned for that and more to come. Good morning.
Galway Talks in association with Tesco. Tesco Knocknacara is now open.